Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT. Bandwidth for the Tech Guy is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com. Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. This show originally aired on the Premier Radio Network on Sunday, June 8th, 2014. This is episode 1090. Enjoy. The Tech Guy podcast is brought to you by LegalZoom. Visit LegalZoom.com to save on your legal needs and gain access to a network of legal plan attorneys for guidance. LegalZoom is not a law firm. It provides self-help services at your specific direction. Visit LegalZoom.com and use the offer code TECHGUY to receive $10 off at checkout. And by Gazelle, the fast and simple way to sell your used gadgets. Find out what your used Apple or Android device is worth at Gazelle.com. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the Tech Guy. It's time to talk about technology, computers and the internet, home theater, smartphones, all that jazz. Our digital photographer, Beck, from Everest, will be joining us next hour, Chris Marquardt. We're going to do assignment review. That'll be fun. And I find out all about shooting in the world's highest places. That's cool. Kathmandu. Just the name, Kathmandu, that's romantic. Sounds like a song. Well, it is a song. Kathmandu. $1 billion. It's a very Dr. Evil number, isn't it? $1 million was Dr. Evil. $1 billion is how much Uber got in investment in venture capital, valuing Uber at $17 billion. What? I'm telling you, a billion ain't what it used to be. Apple pays $3 billion for headphones. Now $1 billion for Uber, $16 billion for WhatsApp, $3 billion for this and that. It's a billion must be less than it used to be. Well, it is. But is that it's still 1,000 million, right? In the U.S. anyway. $1,000 million.
So I should be dating a billionaire.
Yeah, don't go for the millionaires anymore. Millionaires, dime a dozen. Well, more than a dime. But still, there are plenty of them. Oh, you know, the guy who did the massages at Twitter, he's a millionaire. You know, it's not the guy who did the mural at Facebook, he's a millionaire. Millionaires, schmillionaires. In this modern day and age, if you ain't got a billion, you ain't nothing. It's amazing. $1 billion. Now, I don't think that... Do you know what Uber is? Uber isn't even nationwide. It's in some big markets in the U.S. and around the world. It's a taxi service, basically.
I take it a lot.
Well, people in San Francisco seem to love Uber. Now, Yes. There's Uber and there's UberX. Uber is the black car service, a little fancier, a little more expensive. UberX is... It's a lesser vehicle.
Be a Prius or a Camry.
Yeah. Do you do Uber X?
I do both.
Yeah.
It's more the interface and the app and the clean ride and the nice drivers.
That voice, by the way, Heather Hammann, the Uber rider. Mm-hmm. She's also the Uber phone answerer. I think that one of the appeals of Uber, because it isn't cheaper. I guess Uber X might be comparable to a taxi, but Uber itself is not cheaper. It's expensive. It's cool. You launch the app, and by the way, if you have the app on your phone now, it's built into Google Maps, so you can, you know, if you want to get home, one of the choices will be Uber, and the Uber app launches. It shows where you are. It knows because your phone knows, and it shows a map, and then you say call car. That's all. You press a button. And then it'll show how long it's going to take for that car to get there. It'll show a dot on the map where the car is. And if you're in a big city, you know, usually that's just a few minutes away. You can watch as the dot approaches. Furthermore, it shows you a picture of the driver so you know who to expect. He gets, by the way, a picture of you. Well, I don't know if he gets a picture of you, but I think he does. He knows where you are and...
Your name.
And then the experience is he pulls up. And he goes, "Hi, Heather. Let me invite you into my leather-coated interior. And you hop in. The cars are clean. They smell fresh, like pine needles. The music is wafting lazily through the speakers. And the driver, who has a PhD, by the way, in English, will say to you, "Now, Heather, where would you like to go?" Actually, he already knows, doesn't he? Do you tell him when you call him? No, you don't.
You do tell him when you get in. I think you could. You can price out your fare quote if you want to put in your
destination. But I think the app just says, "Come over. Come here, big boy." Now, Uber drivers, Uber says the median income for Uber drivers is higher than a limo driver. And for Uber X drivers, higher. I think $74,000 is the median income in the in San Francisco for an Uber driver. That's pretty good. Good money. So that's why drivers like it. By the way, the other reason riders like it, I didn't mention the end. You have arrived in luxurious, air-filled comfort at your destination. And that's it. You get out of the car and you say, "Thank you very much." He's automatically tipped. He's automatically paid. It just happens because Uber has your credit card and you don't have to think about it. And when Uber works, it is. It's a magical experience. And maybe it is worth that premium price. My only bad experience with Uber was in Paris, of course, when the Uber driver said, "Oh, the app crashed. I don't know how much to charge you." And at that point, we're in a little bit of a quandary. I don't know how much to pay him either. Methinks the app crashed on purpose. And he got a little more money out of me as a result. But that is Paris. Now, the Wall Street Journal said $1 billion in, actually $1.2 billion in venture capital and an evaluation of $18.2 billion is crazy, mostly because there's nothing to stop others from doing the same thing. In fact, there is. There's a competitor already called Lyft, L-Y-F-T. Those are a little bit less, it's less of a, Lyft is less of a elegant experience. They can be clunkers. You know it's a Lyft car because it has a big green, or is it pink? Maybe it's pink mustache on the front of the car. Big, too, like 3-foot mustache. Uber also is competing against the taxi company and the limo company. There's another company starting up called Sidecar that's similar. So I wonder, you know, with all that competition, if there's going to be a lot of profit. Oh, let's not forget that in many markets, the taxi commission in New York and other places has sued Uber, saying you can't start a taxi service without a medallion, and we control the medallion. Even the most, according to the Wall Street Journal, aggressive estimates of Uber's value, assuming they capture 50% of the world taxi market in 5 years, is still less than the $18.2 billion valuation. We're in an amazing time. As it turns out, it's better not to make any money at all in a company if you want to get bought. I've mentioned this before. Companies like WhatsApp that make almost no money, YouTube, when it was sold, the list is very long, were worth more because there wasn't any revenue to compare it to. You know, in the normal world, the real world, you look at how much money a company makes and then its value is some multiple of its revenue or profit. But apparently the all bets are off in the tech industry. And Uber is considered a tech startup. I don't know if we are in a bubble. Some say, well, this is a sure sign it's a bubble, by which they mean the prices are overvalued and the bubble will burst at some point, as it did in 2000, and everything will crash and we'll all be depressed for a year or two and, you know, that kind of thing. Or maybe this is really reflecting the incredibly increased value and stuff when it's attached to a smartphone. Even when I put it that way, it doesn't sound like that's the latter is the right choice. It sounds like we're in a bubble. It really does. I'm still aghast at $16 billion for an app, for WhatsApp. Incredible. 8888 Ask Leo is the number. Let's talk about tech. And usually when we talk, you know, we don't talk about these highfalutin philosophical things. I bring them up, but I know. All people ever really want is, my computer won't work. What's going on? I can't get, which smartphone should I buy? And those calls I welcome. I got a virus. Did you see the city that got Crypto Locker and refuses to pay in New Hampshire town? You know about crypto. It's still going around. Crypto Locker, I've warned you against many times. If you have a good backup, you're really not, susceptible to Crypto Locker. What happens is a virus gets on your system or your network and encrypts everything and says, pay us and we'll unlock it. Town says, no, we'll figure it out. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. No, we won't pay. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888, ask Leo. For years, I've been using Google's Gmail for all my email and then forwarding it and doing different stuff. But Gmail was the main place my email went. It does such good spam filtering. I have not seen a lot of emails that are spam. Almost all my emails are clean. Just last week or the week before, I stopped using Google Mail, Gmail, and I moved it to another service, which has its own spam protection, and I have local spam fighting and stuff. But still, all of a sudden, a lot more attack emails are getting through, malware emails are getting through. And I look at these, and I go, no wonder we get so many calls from people who have been attacked. I despair. And they're very, credible. I'll get three or four at once. Amex offers, Walmart gift card offers, Apple gift. And I've gotten a number of emails. Maybe you have too, that says, Google would like to offer you a job. I'm a headhunter. Apple would like to offer you. I've been offered jobs by Google and Apple many times in the last few days. Many special gift cards. Vouchers. I've got today, this morning alone, 9:57 a.m., 9:59 a.m., and 10:24 a.m., I got three emails offering Walmart voucher codes. You've won a Walmart reward just for shopping at Walmart. I've never shopped at Walmart, but thank you. These are, and I know you, because you listen to this show and you're a smart cookie, you look at those and go, ha-ha. If you use Gmail, you don't even see them. Big check mark for Gmail on that one. But most of us don't. Gmail is not universal by any means. And if you see these, I'm sure you go, yes, and you delete them immediately, or you send them to the spam bucket or whatever it is you do. You report them to the authorities. But how many less sophisticated users get bit by these? If you see a gift in your mail, a Walmart gift card, All of these have one thing in common. They will all have a button or an image that says "click here." Now the key, and the key on this is if you just get HTML email, you'll see the image, you'll see the click here. You won't see where you go when you click there. Now the emailer I've been using, if I hover, and yours might do this too, if I hover the mouse over the button, will show me where that link goes. And invariably, it does not go to American Express or Google or Apple or Walmart, but to a usually very oddly named domain. I'm looking at one that goes to ytan.rozyme.com. These are actually random domain names. They're not real words. And that immediately should be a warning to you. But I've said it so many times, I just want to say it again. And you know better because you're smart, but tell your friends and family members who are less sophisticated, don't click links in email, period. Don't click links in email. If you really want to get that Walmart gift card, right-click on the link and copy it and then paste it into your browser, or better yet, paste it into a word processor or somewhere where you can examine it. Examine the link. And if it's not to the same company, and look very carefully at the stuff right before .com. If it's not exactly Walmart.com, don't click it. Just throw it out because it's bogus. So it's very disappointing to see all of this, and I really despair and worry for friends and family members who must see a lot of this. Help them. Tell them. Don't click links in email. Be very careful about offers. And a lot, of course, these guys are smart, the guys who create these mail messages. They do everything they can, we call it social engineering, to hook you psychologically. they'll say things like, your account, we've seen four logins from foreign countries on your bank account. Quickly log in and make sure everything's okay. And you'll go to a page, it'll look just like your bank page, because that's easy. Faking the look of your bank page is easy. But it's a lot harder. In fact, it's virtually impossible to fake the name. So look in the browser bar where you type in bankofamerica.com and make sure that that's, in fact, better yet, type it in by hand, by yourself. Make sure that says what it should say. And it has a little green mark or a lock or, you know, a certificate. This is why we also say never use out-of-date browsers like older versions of an Internet Explorer particularly, because they don't do the kinds of protecting that they ought to, that they need to. Oh, here's another one. I've been identified to upgrade to a platinum card. It's easy if you look at these closely to see that they're phony. The grammar's usually bad because mostly they don't come from native English speakers. They come from, you know, bad guys around the world. They often offer more than makes any sense. It's really tricky, and unfortunately, it's just become a cesspool out there. The best thing is to use good email filtering that catches these scams before they even get to you, before you even download them. And that's why I think, you know, I recommend Gmail for a lot of people. I stopped using it for mostly technical reasons. Apple doesn't... Gmail is kind of a non... If you use it on the web, it's fine, but Apple's email program doesn't handle it well, and it just doesn't seem to work right. And Gmail's intended to be used in a web browser on the web, and it works best that way. If you don't mind doing it that way, and most people like to do it that way, Gmail's great. I don't know of any other free email system that does as well. A lot of people worry, though, about giving all that information up to Google. You know, there's increasingly a drumbeat that Google knows too much. Google knows too much. That's the price, of course, you pay for free email and really great spam filtering, is that there's another guy getting in there. The Internet. I swear. What a concept. 8888-ASK-LEO, that's the phone number. I will take phone calls. We also invite you to visit the website. That's where all the answers to the questions, all the things I talk about are. The website is techguylabs.com, techguylabs.com. And you know what I'm going to do is put a link to the anti-phishing work group. Phishing is spelled with a P-H. Antifishing.org. It's the APWG. And it's a group that does a lot, I think, of good. Their members include Google, WebSense, and others. They do a lot of good in educating people about phishing, what phishing looks like. You can report phishing scams there. Usually by the time you report it, it's too late. But they also have a wonderful, or they used to, let me see if they still have a database of phishing emails. I guess they've stopped doing that. Because that was great, because you could go and show Grandma, look, these are what they look like. And Grandma would say, wow, I get that mail all the time. Yes. Yes. They're out there like crazy. And what are they trying to do? I guess I should mention one of the things they're trying to do is either get you to give them your banking login, or your American Express login, or to somehow steal money for you. There's a really good anti-phishing Phil quiz you can take that will see how smart you are here. That's fun. All right, let's go to the calls right after this. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Somebody in the chat room said, well, I'm not sure which is worse, the bogus offer for a credit card that leads you to a hacker's site, or the actual offer that charges you 36% interest yearly. Yeah, they're both kind of scams, aren't they? It's hard to tell. 8888-ASK-LEO. It's really a good idea for everybody to exercise caution. Be careful out there. It's dangerous. Heather Hammond's here. She's keeping an eye on the phones, and I've talked a lot, Heather, so I think it's time for me to take somebody, put somebody on the air here. Who do you want me to start with?
Let somebody give you a rest for a second. Huh. Catch your breath. Okay, Joshua in Greenville, Wisconsin.
I love it. Hi, Joshua. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hey, Leo.
Hey, Hey, Joshua.
It's been a while since I listened to you, but I had a problem and just like figured that you were on the air about now.
Only listen when you have a problem. Don't listen any other time.
No. I listen to your podcast when
it's
I'm
okay.
mowing lawns.
I'm teasing
I'm
you.
I'm shipping out for the Air Force soon. So
hey, thank you for busy. Your service and congratulations. That's great. What can I do for you?
Here's my problem. My dad is, so I'm 20 years old. I'm still on my dad's cell phone contract.
Yeah.
And he's very tech, anti-tech. Like, I have this really dumb basic phone. So I like to run and just do stuff and take pictures. So I have an iPod Touch. But that is just, the screen's half dead and it's just
It's time for you to get off dad's account, get on your own account, and get your own smartphone. How about that?
Well, here's the problem. I'm on his account for like another year, and I just...
Well, if dad's willing to pay, you buy the phone, let dad pay for the account.
He won't let me get a smartphone, though, so...
Oh, why, I oughta...
I know. My internet runs at 1.2 megabits per second, so...
Oh, all right.
It's really slow.
Yeah. So you live with a Luddite. But good news, the Air Force is very techy, so you'll get much better internet. You know what you might want to get is a tablet at this point. You can get them very inexpensively. My recommendation...
I do have a tablet.
Oh, all right.
Note 8.
Say again?
And it worked well. I have a Galaxy Note 8.
Okay. That's a good tablet.
Except that that's huge. And what I was wondering, is there like a cheap smartphone? Because I was looking at the new iPod Touches, and it's $300, and that was a little bit of a sticker.
Oh, there's some excellent, inexpensive smartphones that are really great. So Dad's not against the idea of paying for the data plan.
He is. So that's what I was wondering. Is there one I can get like just without the data plan? So no. I have the camera, the GPS for running, and then just all the music and stuff and the apps available?
You could get any smartphone and not get a phone account on it, and it will be that. It won't have a data plan, but it won't have phone calls either.
That's fine with me, so I got my dumb phone for that.
Yeah. So what you're going to want to do is get an unlock. It basically is just like buying a tablet or an iPod Touch. The phone's in there, but you're not going to put a SIM card in it. You're not going to use it. You're just going to use it with Wi-Fi. That's right?
Yep. Yes, that's correct.
Almost anything will do. There are a lot of great choices. What's your budget?
Well, the iPod Touch I was looking at is $300, so anything under that would be great.
You don't want to buy an iPod Touch?
It's $300. It's a little too much. Because the contract's up in a year, so I'll probably be getting my own smartphone then and paying for it myself. So that's why I want some, like, cheaper that I can use for a year or so. Right. And then
the problem when you look at prices, and people in the chat are saying things like, well, the Moto X is only $50 now at Best Buy. When you see those prices, those are what we call subsidized prices. They require 2-year contracts. That's what you don't want. So what you're going to be getting is an unsubsidized or unlocked phone. And you're probably not going to get it from a phone store. You could go to somewhere like Best Buy, electronics store, and explain that that's what you want. Mr. Mike says that's without a 2-year contract. I'll tell you what, if they have the Moto X for $50 without a contract or the Moto G, that would be a very good choice. The Moto G without contract, I think, is around $150. These are Android devices, much like your Galaxy. It's a small screen. It's 4.7 inches. But it's a great device. It's a full Android device. They do a lot of very cool things. The key is to, you know, look for those little wiggle words that say with 2-year activation, that kind of thing, because you don't want that.
Okay.
A number of companies offer these. Sometimes they call them unlocked or unsubsidized phones. And the way it'll work is you'll be able to use it for now without getting a phone account. And even better, in 2 years when you can get your own, you could just put a SIM card in it and it will be your phone and you won't have to do anything fresh or new or different.
That's what I was going to ask. Could I just pop a card into it and make it my phone?
Yeah, you'll want to get one that is a GSM that works with either T-Mobile or AT&T. I think if you go to any phone store, you can say, I want that. The Moto G is probably the one I would get. That is Motorola's low-priced version of the Moto X. I think unlocked $150, unsubsidized $150, and that's every bit as good as your iPod Touch and a lot more modern.
All right, so I could just pop a SIM card into it, and then it'll become my phone. So then, actually, that raises another question: is there a Samsung one? Because then I might just get a more expensive one and just wait it out.
Sure. There are many Samsung phones. I mean, $300 is the problem.
Well, 400, 500?
Yeah, if you're willing to spend more money, you could get a Samsung Galaxy S3, the older one, or Galaxy S4. They're selling the S5 now, and I bet you those would be less expensive as well. If you are interested, you want to stick with Android?
Yes, I do. Yeah. I don't really like Apple, and yeah. I love the Samsung, whatever the UI that they have, the TouchWiz.
All right, yeah, if you love Samsung, yeah, absolutely. Visit a Best Buy, a Target. And say, I want to get an unsubsidized Samsung and shop around that way. You'll have some good choices. I think there are actually some very good choices. You might, somebody in the chat room is saying, and I agree with this, go to play.google.com, the Google store, and you can buy a unsubsidized, unlocked Nexus 5 phone. That's a fabulous phone. I wonder what they're charging for the Nexus 5. I think it's more like $350. But that's not completely out of your ballpark. But if you want Samsung, you just shop around. You can get those. And the older ones, the S3 and the S4, because they're not in demand, will be a lot less expensive. Good luck in the Air Force, Joshua. Thank you for your service. We appreciate it. And stay in touch. Rob in Cincinnati, Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo. Thanks for taking my call. Sure, I'm excited about the WWDC and those announcements that were made last week. Oh, boy.
I agree. You know, and some pundits said, oh, there's Apple again with their reality distortion field. And it's true. Unless Apple actually delivers on these promises, they could be vaporware, thin air. But I think not. I think Apple has a very good roadmap for the future, both with the iOS and with the desktops, the Mavericks.
You guys on MacBreak Weekly sounded pretty excited about it.
I was very excited. It's easy to get excited when you're hearing this, and the only thing that you would want to do is always add that. But they they have to deliver. They've promised us great things before, like Mobile Me, that didn't deliver. No. So Apple's history, especially with network services. One of the things they talked about is iCloud Drive, which is a direct competitor to Dropbox and Google Drive, that's very affordable, that lets you store all your photos, not just 1,000, but all your photos in the cloud, where you can stream them to any device. They talked about home automation, the idea that you could use fingerprint ID, the Touch ID, and the 5S and later phones to log into your bank. All of these things are exciting when they happen. Hang on, we'll talk to you and answer your question right after this. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I like the G, but you know I'm an X fan. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888. Ask Leo. We were talking with Rob in Cincinnati. You have a question for me, Rob?
Yeah, I sure do, Leo. I got a 5-year-old MacBook Pro, mid-2009, with a 2.53 gigahertz Intel Core 2 dual processor in it. I've been running VMware Fusion with Windows XP. Now, I'm sitting here with Windows 7 Home Premium, wanting to put it on there, and wanting to know if it's going to have enough horsepower to run Windows 7 Home Premium on it, or should I just let my just get another computer for Windows computer just for the two programs I need on Windows, and then use my MacBook Air for my laptop?
Oh, it will absolutely have enough horsepower. Oh, Windows 7 is actually a little lighter weight than XP.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah. You might notice it improving in speed. Do you run it in boot camp, or do you run it in a virtualization?
I've got VMware Fusion, 5 or something like that.
So what really will impact it is the amount of RAM you have. Remember, VMware Fusion is sharing memory and processor with the Macintosh operating system, which is running at the same time. That's the limitation. Core Duo is fine for Windows 7. Windows 7 is not particularly heavyweight. Do you run in coherence mode, or do you run it as a full Windows desktop?
I'm not sure what that means. You probably can pull Windows desktop.
Actually, VMware 5 is so old, you may not have this as a feature. Newer versions of VMware, you can run just the app And it looks like the app is a window on the Macintosh operating system.
I'm running full up, so
you have to boot the whole thing. Yeah. So it needs 4 gigs of RAM. How much RAM do you have in the thing?
8.
Yeah. So make sure you give 4 gigs to Windows 7 in the settings, and you should be all right. The problem is maybe you're sharing it, but it should be fine. I think Windows 7 is a little lighter weight than XP.
Well, primarily I'm just running QuickBooks Pro 2014 and also an older version of Sony Vegas Pro. But I have my MacBook Air, which runs, Pro Tools and all of that kind of stuff. So.
Right. I would try it. I don't think you need to get a new computer just for that.
Good. Hey, yeah. That's good news.
Yeah. And if you really need more speed, you can always put Boot Camp on that machine. You have the Boot Camp Assistant, and you run it, and it will partition the hard drive, install Windows on that partition, and then what happens is you boot into Windows, and it runs fully. It doesn't share anything. It has full access to the system, and in that case, you've got plenty of horsepower to run Windows. It's nice to be able to run both, isn't it? It's actually one selling point for Macintosh. Even for Windows users, it's the only hardware that will do both Mac OS and Windows. So it's kind of a nice mix. Ofer, Los Angeles. Hey, Ofer. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hello, Leo. Long time since I last talked to you, but I'm a regular listener.
I know, and we welcome you and your contributions to the GizWiz as well.
Thanks. I'm working on a website where I'll be reviewing and commenting on other websites. And I want to have a screenshot of the homepage and a thumbnail of the screenshot as part of my UI.
Yeah, and I understand what you're saying. So, we're going to review the Tech Guy Labs site. So you have a little thumbnail of the front page of the site that people can see next to the review. And if they click on it, you want the full screen version.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So right now I'm using Photoshop Elements on Windows, at Windows 7. And it's just too much work.
Yeah. You make two images. You make a small one and a big one.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, there's a cheap way to do it. There's no work at all. HTML supports this directly. You can say the resolution of the thumbnail, you just shrink it down. They're still loading the full image, but they only see a smaller version of the image. And then when they click on it, it will link to the full image. So that doesn't require anything on your part. You just, right. In the HTML, you say what the image size is for the image on the page. And then, of course, when they click it, then it opens another page with the full-size image. That's a very easy thing to do. You can also get batch. Are you on Windows or Mac?
Windows.
There are a number of great tools for batch resizing that will allow you to do this kind of on a whole folder full of images. Irfan View, IRFAN View is a very good choice for that. And then if it depends who your host is. We were just talking about Squarespace. Hosts often will do this automatically. You can ask them to do that. Are you using a template? Are you hosting the site? Where's the site?
It's a Joomla site being hosted at GoDaddy.
Okay. GoDaddy wouldn't do it, but Joomla might. So you might look in the code on the Joomla is his content management system. You might look on the code on Joomla. A lot of times, these installations have image magic running in the background, and you can say, I want a small... You can, in a way, automate this. But really, the simplest thing to do is in the tag, when you... Okay, we're going to get a little geeky here.
Yeah.
I presume that you have access to HTML code in your Joomla posts. When you put the image, image src equals, and you do quote, da-da-da, dot JPEG quote, you can also, at that point, say... The size of it, the dimensions of it, height and width, and specify that. So specify it smaller. And now the negative of this is the user still downloading the full sized image, but that's not necessarily a negative. If they click on it, they've already preloaded it, and you shouldn't let your images get too big anyway. And that involves using a good image editor to create a JPEG that looks good on the screen, but is quick to load. A lot of people, bandwidth and got so cheap, people got so lazy that sometimes you'll see 100 megabyte plus images on web pages. And in my day, you couldn't do that. And so I just always get in the habit of making sure the images are as small as possible. And the nice thing about JPEG compression is it really will make a small image without degrading it too much. If you look really closely, you can notice. Martin in Europe has given us a link on the Stack Overflow on how you can use JavaScript, HTML5, and Canvas to do the same thing as well. We'll put that in the show notes. That's a more advanced technique for the more advanced user. I think if you do the JPEG properly, it will handle this scaling very nicely. You know, you say height equals whatever it is, 150. Make sure you get the aspect ratio right, by the way, because you don't want it to distort. And you can. You can make it distorted. You can make it weird. It's not unusual to do that. Just make sure your images aren't too big so that they're not loading too much more than you expect. Hey, it's nice to talk to you, Ofer. I appreciate it. Stay cool in L.A. I guess it's going to be a hot day all over the West Coast. We're expecting a 99 degrees today in Petaluma. Holy cow. That's unusual for this neck of the woods up here in the wine country of California. The grapes are just going to be boiling hot. 8888 Ask Leo is the number. I mentioned I put stuff on the website, like a link to this longer article. That's techguylabs.com. After the show, you'll get audio and video from the show, question by question. You can go there and add your comments and thoughts, too. If you've got an idea, you have a better way to do it, please do. TechGuyLabs.com. Google can never be wrong. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here. It's Tech Guy time. We're going to talk about the computer, the internet, the smartphone, the home theater, and yes, in half an hour, our digital photographer, Chris Marquardt, is back from tromping around Mount Everest, Kathmandu. And we'll do a little review of our assignment in a little bit. Breaking news. Boy, they seem to be doing... companies do a lot on the weekends these days. It seems like boards of directors like to meet. You may remember that T-Mobile has been kind of in play. Sprint has been kind of in play. These are the number three and number four cell phone companies in the U.S., AT&T and Verizon, so dominant that they've been looking to be, you know, acquired and so forth. It looks like that there will be a merger of Sprint and T-Mobile into one carrier if approved by the federal government. And that's actually a long shot. I think the government put the kibosh on AT&T. Sprint, was it? Boy, I don't even remember now. Saying, you know, we need the competition. SoftBank USA, the big Japanese investment company and phone company, is apparently who owns, I think, a majority interest in Sprint, will rebrand T-Mobile and Sprint to SoftBank USA. And I think this is interesting. The CEO of the combined company, SoftBank USA, will be the current CEO of T-Mobile, a very flamboyant and quite brilliant guy named John Ledger. He's the CEO of T-Mobile. He really took T-Mobile in the last year back into profit and did quite well. The CEO of Sprint, maybe not so successful, Dan Hesse. So that's very interesting. Sprint, of course, owns part or all of MetroPCS, Boost Mobile, and Virgin Mobile. These are carriers that ride on the Sprint network. Actually, there's quite a few of them. They will be combined into one company. So I'm not sure what happens to Ting and other MVNOs like them. It's an interesting story. This is just breaking now. And we'll watch with interest as more information emerges. My feeling on this is it's a bad idea. We like the competition. I understand that Sprint and T-Mobile are doing poorly, less so T-Mobile. As long as they're doing well enough to survive individually, I would not allow them to merge. They may make the case, other companies have done, neither one of us is going to survive if you don't let us merge. And it would still give us three big carriers in the U.S. But I like four better. And I know federal regulators do as well. So we'll follow that with interest. I like T-Mobile a lot. T-Mobile is one of those companies, scrappy little company that provides some real value for service. They're owned, you know, globally, they're Deutsche Telekom. They're the big German telecom. But I guess Deutsche Telekom wants to divest itself. Isn't it interesting that these companies are owned by Germany and Japan? I don't know what to say about that, but the couple of days after the anniversary of D-Day, it's just interesting. Let's go back to the phones. Jen in Santa Monica, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Jen.
Hi, Leo. Thanks for all your advice on the radio.
My pleasure. Thank you.
I've been listening to you for as long as you've been on KFI. But,
that's a long time. I celebrated my 10th anniversary in January.
Yes. I figured that was about how long.
Yeah.
I'm having an issue with Samsung. And I want you to consider the fact that I'm a student and I have a disability, so I'm very poor. And so when you're considering whether or not I'm being unreasonable, but I have a Samsung Galaxy S3.
Okay.
And it basically bricked itself during an over-the-air update. Of the OS. And I'm off of any type of service on that. I was just using it on Wi-Fi. But
so you don't have a carrier.
I don't have a carrier for it.
Who did you get it from originally?
T-Mobile.
Okay.
Yeah. So I went to the online forums all over yours as well as others, and I saw many posts where people were having the same problem. And one guy said that Samsung had basically admitted that it was a design flaw for them, and they said,
"No, I would be very shocked. It would be criminal." And I think they'd be prosecuted if they were to send a signal out or an update out that bricked the phones. That would be cause for criminal prosecution. Not even civil, but criminal prosecution because they're damaging a personal possession. So that's just a conspiracy theory that I'm sure is untrue.
Okay. So I don't know what to do now. I called Samsung and I've had very bad experiences with all of their supervisors.
Yelled at you?
Yes, and they hung up on me, and one of them was basically trying to convince me that my phone was not bricked because Samsung does not define, you know, bricked as a phone not being able to turn on. So,
well, it may not be bricked. It's old enough that maybe the battery has stopped working. I mean, it's not working. The problem is it's out of warranty. And I understand that you're broke. So I'm not going to say, you know, I'm not going to yell at you. Don't worry.
Okay.
I completely understand that. And it's an expensive device to have non-functioning. But it's fairly old. It's, what, 3 years old now, 4 years old?
Not four. I believe I got it about 2.5 years ago.
Yeah. I mean, these things are not designed to last forever. You're carrying them around and so forth. If it doesn't work, in my definition, it's a brick. But what we don't know is why it's a brick. Is it the battery die? You know, after a while, these batteries won't take another charge. Now, you can open that phone up and put a new battery in.
Which battery?
When you pry the back off of the phone, there's a big white...
Oh, yeah, I have five of them.
Oh, well, then it's not the battery.
It's not a problem with the battery.
You're a smart woman. That's
update.
Yeah. No, I think you're right. I think it's not the battery. You have five of them. It's definitely not the battery. So it won't turn on at all. You can't get it started.
Right. During the update, it said that it was unsuccessful and it was going to go back to the original OS setup, and then it didn't, and then it would never turn on again.
Yeah,
I had a Samsung tech look at it at Best Buy. He couldn't get it to open.
He couldn't get it into recovery mode at all?
No.
Okay, because that's the one hope for you is if you can get into recovery mode, and that you do that, I believe, by pressing the on and volume up button and holding them until it goes into a recovery mode. He tried that?
Yeah, he actually hooked it up to the computer because I tried all the different types of reboots and what do you call them? You know, you can use the volume up or the volume down.
Right. The volume up is a hard recovery. The volume down is...
Right, so I couldn't do that. He hooked it up to his special computer, and he said that it was dead.
Well, that happens. Unfortunately, it's out of warranty, and it happens. Things die.
Okay.
And they, I think you might be able to make a case you broke it, but they're going to say, well, it was, we didn't break it. It was going to die anyway. It just happened that in the process of the upgrade, it did die. It seems to me that if you want to be ambitious and you're smart, obviously, you might go to XDA Developers. Do you know that forum, xda-developers.com?
Yeah, I think I went there.
Yeah, go there. And what you're going to want to do is, do you have a Windows computer lying around?
Yes.
Access to one? You might be able to use Odin and get into this phone. If we can, you know, here's the problem. If it's a hardware failure, which it sounds like it is, nothing's going to bring it back. But if it's just the firmware that's damaged, there will be a way we can get it back. And so go to XDA Developers and see if somebody there can help you out. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888-ASK-LEO. That's the number. 8888-ASK-LEO if you have a question, a comment, or suggestion. Best Buy has the Motorola G, which is the low-price version of the Motorola X, for $69, says Devo in our chat room. So the good news is there are very inexpensive smartphones out there. The bad news is really these are consumer-grade kind of junk electronics. And because of, you know, portable is always going to get beat up more than desktop. And, you know, a couple of 3 years for a phone often, I think, is the limit. 8888-ASK-LEO. TechGuyLabs.com. Donnie in Fontana, California. Hi, Donnie.
Oh, sorry, Johnny.
Johnny.
Yeah, sorry, that was my fault.
That's not your fault. Welcome.
Hi. Hey, I've been listening to you since I was, like, small. You would go to the computer shows in Pomona, I believe.
Yeah. Yeah. That was fun. I forgot we did that early on with KFI. Those computer shows were... Yeah, I remember those. I forgot all about those.
I got my first CD burner from there. It took me forever to burn CDs.
That'll give you some idea of the time frame.
Yeah, so I've been in the industry 10 years, seen a lot. So graduated high school, worked with computers, phones, tablets, you name it, whatever.
It's a pretty interesting business, isn't it?
Yeah, I've seen a lot. The rise of flat screens. So
that's right. Remember, we used to have monitors, those big, in fact, at those Pomona computer fairs, big, deep, heavy monitors. Now, everybody's got a flat screen.
Yeah, CRTs, DLPs, it all converted 10 years.
Yep. It's been a fast 10 years. It's funny, when you live in it, it doesn't feel like it's changing that fast. But if you went to sleep for 10 years and you woke up like Rip Van Winkle, you'd be blown away.
Yeah.
You'd say, why are people walking around staring at those little screens? What's wrong? Aren't they worried about getting run over?
Yep.
Everybody's looking at a screen. In 10 years, what will we be looking at? Probably our special glasses with the heads-up displays or something. So what
you
can
won't
I...
even have to... Okay, go ahead.
What can I do for you, Johnny?
Okay, yeah, so I got a question. I've been doing it rogue, my own way. Like, I have two different cell phone lines. Am I allowed to say the companies or no?
Sure.
Okay, I have one on AT&T with limited data.
Yep.
And I have one on Verizon with unlimited data.
Ah.
Yeah, I still got that lucky one.
Yeah.
And what I've been doing, I'm using two iPhones on both. I have an iPhone 5 on AT&T and a 5S on Verizon.
Okay.
And I love Android. It's just the iPhone, pretty much, it's just safer for me to use. The things that I'm doing online, I don't have to worry about anything.
You like the incognito mode, the private browsing. All right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I have Android phones. I get them for my family. But I use primarily the Verizon line. That's my home internet also.
Right. Because you have unlimited.
Yeah.
You share it. You must be paying for it, though. They want another $20 a month, I think, for that.
Yeah. So I pay that. But it's worth it in the long run.
Oh, sure.
I don't have cable or satellite. I do everything off the phone.
And if Verizon is fast enough where you are, that's a great, that's a very economical and smart solution.
Oh, yeah. That's
Watch out, though, because sometimes when they say unlimited internet, it's limited. to 5 or 8 gigabytes, and that it's they don't cut you off after that, but they slow you down. So it might be worth paying attention to that.
My question to you now, because I want to get into Android now. I'm fairly familiar, but there's always room to learn, as you know.
Absolutely.
So I want to get. I'm asking you, on which line would you prefer to get an Android line? Like if it was your choice.
How much data do you have on AT&T?
It's only 3 gigs. It's nothing compared to what I use on.
Yeah, it's hard to use more than 3 gigs unless you're using it as a hotspot.
Yeah.
Since you don't have Wi-Fi at home, maybe it isn't so hard because one of the reasons, 3 gigs is enough for most people is because they have Wi-Fi at home and work. They only use it when they're in between home and work. And 3 gigs is a lot of data unless you're watching streaming video or downloading big files. If all you're doing is email and texting and that kind of thing, then 3 gigs is a lot of data in a month.
Yeah.
I don't really have an answer to that question. It just, I guess... The first thing to check is that the phone that you're going to get has a hotspot capability because if you put it on the Verizon phone, you're going to want to use it with hotspotting. I think most Android devices support that built in. It's certainly built into the current versions of the Android operating system, but sometimes carriers take it out. They don't want you to do that. Let me think. What would be a compelling reason to choose one or the other? I don't know. It's just whichever. Are you going to use this as your daily driver? Is this going to be your regular device?
Well, I use primarily the Verizon one. That's my internet source. So everything streaming, downloading. But as far as email, the email I use on my AT&T device. So I use
3 gigs is plenty for email. The email's not very big. I don't see one or the advantage to one or the other, frankly. Doesn't seem to make any difference to me. You're lucky though. I have a feeling, Donnie, that you're kind of a geek, which is good. keep up the good work. Raymond in Thousand Oaks, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Raymond.
Hi, Leo. How you doing?
I'm well. How are you?
I'm good. I had a question. I'm a volunteer for a nonprofit that provides free mental health services to veterans.
Oh, that's great. Thank you.
And my boss wants me to start making podcasts for him.
Right on.
So I found Audacity, which seems fairly simple.
And it's free. Yeah, it's a good choice. That's an audio editing, recording and editing program.
Mm-hmm. But my question is, now when I finish that and then I'm going to export and save it as an MP3, right?
Right.
And then where do I put that file? Do I have to host it somewhere? And how do I get it on iTunes and get people to listen to it?
Yeah, you do have to host it. That's the one cost, really, of podcasting, because most people have a computer, a microphone, they have the software they need, but you've got to host it. And if your podcast gets popular, that could be expensive. So there are a few different ways to do that. Certainly, how many podcasts? You want to do one a week?
About, yeah.
So you're not doing a whole lot of stuff. The first place I send people to is a company called Libsyn, LIBSYN.com. Libsyn stands for Liberated Syndication. They were created to support podcasters, so they don't charge you for bandwidth. You can become very popular, and it'll never cost you more money. They charge you for storage. If you're only doing one podcast a week, it's not very expensive. 50 megabytes of storage, which is probably enough for a month's worth, is $5. So that's not bad at all. $5 a month. And you get, and it will turn your podcast automatically into an iTunes compatible feed so that you just submit it to iTunes and it'll do it. Somebody's suggesting SoundCloud. SoundCloud is a great free storage solution for a limited amount of data. And they can also turn it into a podcast. So that's another, I think, a good choice. They don't, strictly speaking, offer as many features as Libsyn, but they're completely free. So those are two I would absolutely look at. SoundCloud.com and Libsyn, LIBSYN.com. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hey, our show today, our podcast today, brought to you by LegalZoom.com. We're really lucky because we're able to support the podcast version of this radio show with our own advertisers. So for that reason, we can cut out the radio ads and to give you a much cleaner podcast feed. LegalZoom.com, one of the sponsors of today's show. They're a great company, too. I actually owe them big because when I was starting my company in 2005, I needed to... Well, I wasn't sure what I needed to do. And I asked around. I asked my friend Kevin Rose, well, you've started a few companies. What should I do? And he said, well, the first thing you should do is get an LLC. But he said, don't get a lawyer. Because that's a lot of money. Go to somewhere like LegalZoom.com. Well, I mean, this is the place. $99 plus state filing fees to create your limited liability. And by the way, we're still running on that operating agreement we got in 2005. It was that good. Maybe you'd prefer a Chapter S or C corporation. That's also $99. The other thing I did, I trademarked the name of the company, the logo, $199. That's not bad. They'll also help you, well, if you look, with a lot of different business needs. See, it turns out most of this stuff is really straightforward. So you step-by-step go through a questionnaire, and they help you do it. LegalZoom has been around now, I think, for 10 years, helping entrepreneurs launch their dreams. You can, too, at LegalZoom.com. LegalZoom is not a law firm, but they do provide self-help services at your specific direction. And if you want a lawyer, they've got this great, I think this is such a great, and they didn't have this when I was using it. I would have liked it. They have a pre-negotiated, flat rate, very affordable legal plan that gives you advice from an experienced attorney in your state. And you can ask them questions like, well, should I be a Chapter S or C Corp? I would have liked to ask, what state should I incorporate in? That was one question. I just kind of made up Delaware, but it would have been nice to call somebody up. And boy, the price is right on this. You can look at their profiles and unedited user reviews to pick the attorney that's right for you. Also for your family, wills, trusts, durable health care, power of attorney, living wills. A lot of good stuff in here. Pet protection agreement. I am a big fan. Try it today. LegalZoom.com. All I ask is when you check out, use the offer code TECHGUY, and you'll receive $10 off at checkout. Use the offer code TECHGUY and get a special price on trademark, copyright, or provisional patent applications to celebrate all the million businesses that got started right at LegalZoom.com. A-plus from the Better Business Bureau. LegalZoom.com, offer code TECHGUY. Hey, Chris Marquardt is here. Our photo guy's back. He's been traipsing all over the Nepal and Kathmandu and the Himalayas. Welcome back, Chris.
Hey, Leo. It was awesome.
Did you have a great time?
You should have been there. Oh, you would have loved it. You would have loved
this
it.
This is your third time doing that?
It's the fourth time in the Himalayas, the third time around Mount Everest. So we took 16 photographers up to Mount Everest Base Camp, or at least most of them. Some opted to just go almost there, but a few actually made it up to the actual Mount Everest Base Camp.
Base Camp isn't the peak of Mount Everest.
No. No. The peak is really high. No, what we did is we got to an elevation of 17,500 feet, roughly almost 8,000 feet. We went up through the so-called Gokyo Valley, up over two passes that both are almost 18,000 feet high.
Wow.
Wow. And then we took it very slow.
No one was tempted to go the rest of the way and just, you know, summit while they're there.
Not quite. And I mean, it's a photo workshop kind of thing. So we most of us were not hikers, like everyday hikers, but more on the photography side. So we made sure that that everyone can do it. And actually, we had one guy there who just, I think a couple of years ago, got two knee replacements, and he made it with us every step of the way.
I mean, it looks, I'm looking at your pictures. Where can we see these, by the way?
You can go to tfttf.com/ET2014. That's a link
URL, but we'll put that at techguylabs.com.
Yeah.
TFTTF, that's his Tips from the Top Floor podcast. TFTTF.com And I bet you there's a link on the front page there too, I'd guess.
There is a link. ET 2014 for Everest Trek 2014.
Fun. Oh my gosh, these are beautiful. Are these all yours or are these students as well?
These are mine. These are mine. These
just are mine. Just gorgeous stuff.
Yeah, so we will do an actual we'll do a public image review with some of the participants in a few weeks when they're working through their pictures right now. They're doing the workflow thing, you know, trying to sift through thousands of pictures. Wow. And as soon as they have those boiled down to a smaller number, we are going to do a public review, and I'm going to post a video about that.
Did you missed? I hope I take it the ice fall, the avalanche there.
Oh, yes, absolutely. I mean, these are kind of two parts. What we did is the trekking, and the other part is the climbing, and we didn't even get near the climbing. Yeah. No.
Still looks pretty treacherous and difficult.
It's a hefty hike up there. I mean, you find your limits, and then you find that those limits are not actually real limits, that they're in your mind, and then you keep going, and it's a very good experience. Every time I do it, I find new limits, and I break them again.
And wonderful pictures, of course, of the landscape, but also of the people. They look like warm and wonderful people up there. Very interesting.
That's, to be honest, but at this point, that's why I'm going back. The landscape is wonderful, it's beautiful, but the people are so, as you said, so warm, so real, so unpretentious. They are just themselves, and they take you for what you are, and it's amazing. So actually, I have friends there now. So when we come back, we meet with them. We were actually invited to a Sherpa wedding, which is not very usual. I mean, as a tourist, you don't get to see these things, but we participated as special guests in a Sherpa wedding with one of the Sherpas who has been up on the mountains with us for several times before.
So I think we'll have time. I hope we're going to have time to review our photo assignment, which you gave us before you left for Everest.
Yes.
The assignment was to take a picture illustrating the idea or concept or word rounded.
Rounded, yes.
Rounded.
And I've wonderful pictures. We got beautiful pictures. I picked three. The first one is by Jackie Smith. It's called Flowers for Wednesday.
Oh, neat.
It's
that beautiful.
Beautiful close-up macro shot of some flowers, round shapes. And I love the color contrasts in there, the red versus the green, kind of a nice primary color contrast there. Popping contrasts, I like that too. That kind of makes the picture jump right at you. So
looks like she did a little bit of processing to get those contrasts to jump. Oh,
yeah.
That's okay.
Most likely.
Not a problem. Not a problem. Nice job. Very much appreciated, Jackie Smith. Our next one from
next
Photos
one.
I Take.
Yes. Taconite. I had to look that up. It's a kind of a ore with iron in it or something.
And it's
looks
round.
Like pebbles. They're rounded pebbles. They're round. And I like the graphical nature, simplified shapes, black and white. So it doesn't have colors to distract you from anything. Everything kind of gets the same weight in terms of visual appearance. And again, contrasts that make the picture pop. I like that. And just a nice little wallpaper kind of type shot. Beautiful.
You know, somebody told me once, when you take your camera around, don't forget to take pictures of textures, of backgrounds, of walls, because those are
one of those, yes.
Yeah, and they're always useful, you know, for web design and other things. It's just nice to have. I don't know why.
Oh, just imagine that picture as a background on your smartphone.
Be beautiful.
This would be beautiful, really beautiful.
Yeah, and you have to remember to do that because, you know, there's no object of interest. It's just the pattern, the design.
Yes.
Finally, this is round. Tommy Sormanen.
Yes.
Looks like a kid going around in a swing or in a
I think so, yeah.
Chair.
It's called Emina, and it's whatever the photographer did, he kind of twisted with the kid. So the kid is on some sort of a playground ride kind of thing, and the photographer twists with the kid. And this way, the kid is—it's like one of those panning shots that you see from race cars, where the photographer moves the camera.
You move the camera to keep the object still, but the background moves.
Yes,
and
he
moving.
Did that, but he did it in a circular fashion. That is what makes this picture so interesting.
I
you hardly ever
technique.
See that.
I love that technique. Cartier-Bresson did that a lot.
And I think it shows motion. Yeah. It shows. It tells a story. It's unusual. I like that it's off center, so that gives it kind of a little weight leaning to the right. So that's a good one, Tommy. Good job. Really good.
Well, three of many great pictures. You can see them all at our tech guy group at Flickr.com. And that's where you should upload your pictures for our next assignment, which Chris is about to give us.
The next assignment, after Rounded, I thought, why not go with Cornered?
Cornered could go both ways.
Yes,
Cornered could be an adjective. It could be. That's good. I like it. Cornered. So we're not going to tell you what that means. You have to figure that out. Take pictures. The whole point of this is just to get you out there. So we want new pictures illustrating the word, the concept, the idea. Cornered. You can upload them to Flickr. Make sure you tag them with the word cornered and submit them to our tech guy group. All of this is free, and there is no prize, no award, except the feeling of great accomplishment when Chris picks yours for our review in a month. Thank you, Chris. Welcome back. It's great to have you.
And I'll be back in about 2 weeks.
Another workshop, no doubt. You can follow
Mania 17.
Oh, you're going on a cruise.
I'm going on a cruise to teach photography, yes.
These geek cruises are fun. I've done many of them. Mania 17 is going where?
It's the British Isles. And one day we might do one together. One day.
Yeah, because we've never overlapped. You can find out more about those at geekcruises.com. Too late probably for Mania 17, but maybe not.
I think it's sold out.
Not
I think
sure
so.
It is by now. Well, all right. Have a wonderful cruise. We'll talk to you in 2 weeks. You can find out more about Chris's workshops and things that he does in public here in the U.S. as well as around the world at discoverthetopfloor.com. And his podcast is a must listen for people who love photography. Tips from the Top Floor. Chris, thanks so much. Welcome back.
Thank you, Leo.
More of your calls to come. I am Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888-ASK-LEO. That's the phone number if you have a question, a comment, a suggestion. Norman's on the line from Tallahassee, Florida. Hi, Norman. You're next, Leo Laporte.
Hello, sir.
Good to see you. What can I do for you?
Yes, I have a MacBook Live that I got for $30.
Good deal.
Yeah, $10 a terabyte.
It's a terabyte?
Yeah.
Wow, for $30, that wasn't new, was it?
No, I bought it off of Craigslist.
Good deal. Was there anything on it?
No.
Okay. Guy was smart enough to wipe it before he sold it to you. Good.
But my problem is that I now have all these pictures and memories of my sister who died last year.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah. And it's wrecked itself. It's wrecked itself, and I need to get information off of there.
And you don't have any other copy.
Right. I call myself backing it up.
Yeah. Well, we want to certainly get those pictures. We don't want to lose those.
Right.
A couple of things to try. The MyBook Live is a USB drive. So it's in a container. There's a number of things that can die. I'm sorry, I shouldn't use that word. There's another things that can fail on that hard drive that might not cause you to lose your data. You just may not be able to access it. So that's what we're going to hope. We're going to hope that the data is still there on the platters, but you just can't access them.
Right.
So, of course, you tried a different cable, I'm sure.
Oh, yes.
And a different computer.
Yes.
Yeah, we're going to eliminate the cable and the computer now. We know that's not the problem. But it still could be the enclosure itself. So the next step, and this is, you have the choice of bringing it to somebody. And
I don't have that option because I'm in a nursing home.
Yeah. Yeah, okay.
I'm disabled.
So you're going to do it all yourself. Do you have another... okay. So the next step would be to take it out of the enclosure. It's in that USB enclosure. And you'll see it's very simple to get out. There's just some screws. And because maybe the enclosure failed. See, the process of troubleshooting anything technological, actually anything in life, is to one by one work through the possible causes. You always start with the easy ones like the cable, the computer. And if we've eliminated those and we continue to eliminate possibilities one by one till we narrow it down. So we're trying to figure out what's wrong. The next easiest thing to check, it's getting less easier, by the way, as we go, is to take it out of the enclosure. Say that failed. That's got some circuitry and so forth. Take the drive itself and connect it to a computer. Now, In order to do that, you're going to need some additional hardware that will interface the bare bones drive to your computer. I've recommended this before. It's a $40 device. You can mail order it from a company called NewerTech. Actually, a number of companies sell these, but we use the NewerTechs. They're called the Universal Drive Adapter. They're about $40. We'll put this in the show notes at Tech Guy
Live. That sounds like a very nice deal, but I only get $35 a month. Because I'm in a nursing home, and that's all they give me.
Man, I feel so bad for you. I don't know what to tell you at this point, Norman. Anything additional you're going to do is going to cost you money. You're either going to have to get some software to bang on the drive. The next thing to do would be to take the drive out of the case. I guess what I would say is see if you can find somebody who will do this for you for free because he cares. He likes you and he wants to get you those pictures. What he'll do is he'll take it out of that case because if the case has failed, that could be the cause of it, and check it on another computer, see if that drive is still there. He's going to want to do that anyway because the next step is to take the drive and run some software on it, and you need to have that drive connected directly to the computer to run some software on it. Is there a computer club? That's what I would try, Norman. Call the local chapter of your PC users group. There will absolutely be somebody there who will know how to do this, and I hope we'll have the heart to help you out here. So if you can call the local computer club, they'll be listed in the yellow pages, and say, hey, I need somebody who's willing to come out here and help me recover this drive. The next step after that is to put it in a computer, try to recover it, and run some software on it. If, unfortunately, the hard drive itself has failed, then it's really way too expensive to recover it at that point. There are companies like Drive Savers that will do it. And you might even, you might just call them, Norman, and tell them your story. And maybe out of goodwill and for the public relations benefit, they might do this for you for free. Drive Savers, they're in Novato, California. They take these drives if they need to, and they can do everything I've mentioned up to this point. And if it still doesn't work, they will disassemble the drive. And they have guys in bunny suits in a clean room because you can't get a speck of dust in these things. They'll actually open it up, and they have the parts for every drive in existence. They can replace those parts and get it working. And they almost always can get the data back on a failed hard drive. Unless the drive has failed because it's melted in a fire or something. They can. In fact, even in those cases, they have a museum of failed hard drives at Drive Savers under the water, corroded by salt water for years, and they still can get the data off of it. Norman, my suggestion, if you can, call a local computer club, or maybe call Drive Savers and say, please, can you help me? I don't have any money, but these pictures of my sister, they're my only, memory of her, and I really want to get them back. Makes me sad, Norman. I hope you find somebody who can help you out there. You know what? Somebody suggests he's in Tallahassee, Florida State. You know, there might be a kid there in the computer science department. Any geek, any true geek can help you. This is something we all do a lot of. But you got to get somebody who's willing to help you for free because he loves you and he wants to help you out. Richard, Oxnard, California. Hi, Richard. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo. Thanks for taking my call.
Thanks for calling.
Before I ask my question, that last caller, that also could possibly be the circuit board on the hard drive itself. I saved a friend's hard drive by replacing a resistor on there.
That's exactly right. That's the next step. You take it out, you see if it's the container. If it's not, it could be the circuit. The worst thing is it could be the motor, the bearings, the stuff inside the hard drive, and that's where you need somebody like Drive Savers to take it apart. But you're right. If you can find it has to be exact. If you can find an exact match, and by the way, Western Digital made a lot of those my drive, so you probably can. Then you might try replacing it. You just don't know until you've replaced it.
Right. I'm like everybody else. I'm stuck in the XP mode. I have to get out of that. And I was wondering, my choice is Windows 7 or Windows 8, which I'm really not excited about. How long is the lifetime of Windows 7 going to be? Do you have any idea on that?
Yeah, Microsoft publishes their EOL, they call it, end of life schedule for all versions of Windows. Windows 7, you've got a good long time. In fact, I think it's probably the case that you've got even longer than Microsoft says, because I think Windows 7 is going to turn out to be one of those things that just goes and goes and goes. Security fixes for Windows 7 go to 2020.
Oh, okay.
So I think you're okay. But I suspect it'll go longer because a lot of times Microsoft especially really tries to keep older operating systems running as long as possible. Remember, Windows XP went out of cycle after 13 years. I think you can expect at least that for Windows 7, maybe even more. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. More of your calls right after this. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Time to talk about computers, the internet, smartphones, home theater, digital cameras, all that jazz. 8888 Ask Leo. That's my phone number. The website, please make a note of it, is techguylabs.com. A great place to know about because, first of all, we've got 1,090 shows under our belt. You can go there and search, and, you know, a lot of questions, there are answers there. You can watch the audio or watch the video and listen to the audio of the show. We put that up there after the fact. You can go question by question, hour by hour, day by day. So you can drill down and see what you need. And most importantly, you can add your thoughts, your comments, your suggestions. That really helps. It'll make the website so much better when people go in there and add stuff. And you can even vote. And this is an important function, too. Vote up or down answers. So if it's a good answer, vote it up. If it's a terrible answer, vote it down. And that way, the best answers will rise to the top. TechGuyLabs.com. We'll put a link in there from Web2468, my book, Troubleshooting Step-by-Step, that might help you get your data back from your MyBook. The chat room's really been great, coming up with lots of suggestions for our caller. Was his name Charles?
Norman,
that's right.
In Tallahassee.
A lot of people, really, and I understand, very sympathetic and want to help Norman get his pictures of his sister, his late sister, back and try to get that MyBook working again. So lots of great suggestions. We'll get those from the chat room into the website, techguylabs.com. Best thing, though, is find a geek. There's, you know, the chat room, they're all volunteering up like a storm. I'll help them. So the geeks are very helpful, especially if they know all this stuff and you don't, and they want to help you. So find a geek. Find your local user group, somebody at Florida State. There's got to be somebody who would say, yeah, I'll do that for you. I'll at least give it a try. I should say, Norman, there's no guarantee we can get it back. You know, it may be lost forever. When you only have one copy of something, it could be lost forever. Did you see that story? Bruce is reminding me in the chat room about this story. A patent troll, and I call him a troll. Really, the correct term is non-practicing entity, NPE. A company, ViMetX, has one business only, that is to license or sue for a patent. They went to East Texas. That's the place to go if you want to sue over patents because they're very sympathetic to the little guy. Sometimes they're confused about patent trolls being little guys. ViMetX sued Apple for infringing on their patents relating to FaceTime and VPN on-demand functions used in iPhones, iPads, and Macs. The jury ruled in their favor. Yeah, you're a little guy. That big, bad California company, Apple, they're ripping you off. So the judge ordered a $368 million payout and ongoing royalty to ViMetX. 1%, very close to 1% of all revenue from iPhones and iPads sold in the U.S. Now, Apple's been fighting it, but we learned on Friday that it's not working. And they may get a royalty of $340 million a year from Apple for something they didn't invent. They don't use to make. They just have some patents. These software patents are very controversial because it's very easy to make a very broad patent that a jury can apply kind of randomly and cost people a lot of money. Vivant X has won on appeal, and they're very close now to winning it all. A 1% royalty. Whew. We've got to do something about patent trolls. This is crazy. Crazy. Let's move on. Jamie in Long Beach, you're next. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hey, Jamie.
Hi, how are you doing?
I'm well, welcome.
Thanks. You do a great service here, and I'm looking forward to an answer here.
What can I do for you?
I am looking to cut the cord.
Okay.
And
fire your cable company, in other words.
Or actually the phone company, but yes. We don't watch stuff in real time. But I'd like to watch the regular shows on a DVR. I've looked at the Master Channel and wondered if you knew anything about that.
I've not used one, but the chat room recommends that. Channel Master is the name of it. Recommends it all the time. I use a TiVo, which is similar as well. These are devices that will record broadcasts for playback. But you said you're cutting the cord. You still have an antenna, in other words.
Yes, we would use an antenna. And I live a kind of crazy life. I move around a lot. I was interested in whether you can watch the stuff on the hard drive with that DVR elsewhere.
Yeah, this is an issue, of course, that comes up all the time because you've got digitized content. You should be able to just copy it off the hard drive, but it's not always easy to do. Cable company DVRs, it's almost impossible. I believe it's easy with the Channel Master or the TiVo. They both have to-go capabilities. So the idea, and we should explain what's going on here, the idea is if you don't want to be on the cable, you don't want to pay that $100 a month cable bill, how can you get everything you want to watch on TV without paying the bill? Now, of course, thanks to Netflix and all these other online services, watching a lot of content's pretty easy. The stuff that's hardest is the live content, the news, the sports, the Academy Awards, the stuff that you can only watch if you get a local television channel. If you're somewhere where you have an antenna, that makes it a lot easier. You can watch on the antenna. In fact, the over-the-air broadcasts are better quality high def than the ones you get on cable or satellite or any other way. They really look good. They're because they're very little compressed. They're much less compressed. The issue, of course, is, well, how can I record it for another time? And that's where Channel Master or TiVo is a good selection. Both of those will attach to your antenna. Channel Master, chief difference in Channel Master is it doesn't have, you don't have to pay for a cable guide. TiVo is fairly expensive. You either have to spend $400 or $500 on a lifetime subscription or $15-$16 a month for a monthly subscription to the channel guide. So TiVo, you got to buy the box. That's hundreds of dollars and pay a monthly fee. Well, we're trying to get out of that. It's still cheaper than your cable, but we're trying to avoid this. So yeah, Channel Master seems like it'd be a good choice. I have not used it, as I said, a number of people say it works quite well. That would be my recommendation. And I believe you should look at the Channel Master website. I believe you can get your data off the Channel Master hard drive so you can put it on an iPad or carry it around or whatever. 8888, ask Leo. Rami is in Los Angeles, our next caller. Hi, Rami.
Hi, Leo. This is Rami. How are you?
I'm well. How are you?
Okay, I'm pulling over so that I can focus on what...
Please do. Be very careful. You don't have to talk to me. I'll fill the time while you find a safe place to pull over so we can talk.
I'm good. Okay, so here's my question. I am a clinical psychologist.
All right.
And I just got a Galaxy S4.
Hold on. I hear the magic music, which means we have to take a network break. We'll be back, though. Hang on just a few minutes. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. A lot of people like this home run. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Sorry I had to put you on hold, Rami.
Not a problem.
Let's start over. You have okay. You're a clinical psychologist. You have a patient info in your phone.
Right. So I have my patient's contact information, and I would like to know if there is a program that I can keep specific information, names and contact numbers of particular people, password protected, without having to lock down my whole phone. Now, this can be used in a number of different areas. I mean, I would like to use the same thing. Let's say my parents are elderly. So I have their names, social security number, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
I'd like to know if there's a program where I can keep specific contact information, password protected, and I have the Galaxy S4.
First of all, I would suggest locking your whole phone, period. Mostly because there's other stuff on there, and if your phone's lost or stolen, you really want to have it locked. Mm-hmm. I know people feel like, oh, I want it just to fire up when I press the on button. You don't. And I'll give you an example. In Australia, remember these hacks people were talking about with the iPhone? That only happened if you didn't have a passcode on your phone. Passcoding your phone, please, everybody, please, just passcode your phone. It's not a huge disruption. Now, I can't speak specifically to the Galaxy S4, although Samsung has this technology they call Knox, and I'm pretty sure it's on the S4. But speaking about the iPhone, if you have the passcode, the entire contents of the phone is encrypted. And the reason I think this is better is you can certainly keep your phone numbers, your patient records and stuff in a secure store. But to dial that number, you'd have to open the store, look at the number, remember it, and then dial it. It's not attached to the dialer. The contacts are. You just tap it and it dials that number. And so if you lock your whole phone, that's going to be the best bet. And in fact, there's other ways information could leak out if you don't lock it. For instance, your phone will have a history of numbers you've dialed. That's information that leaks out unless you lock the entire phone. So I'd encourage you to lock the entire phone. I will tell you, though, a good solution for a lot of this information, and you could even use it for phone numbers if you want, if you don't mind the inconvenience of having to manually dial them, is a password vault like LastPass. You've heard me recommend this before. It's good for so many reasons. You want to store your passwords in it. It's fully strong encrypted. LastPass is the one I recommend, and one of the reasons I do is they don't even have access to the information. So it would be HIPAA compliant. It is what we call trust no one encryption. Only you have the key. And you can store, they have a secure notes feature. So you could store patient notes in it. You certainly could store social security numbers, as I do, passports, anything that you want to protect in the LastPass vault. And it is inaccessible to anybody unless they have your password. Make a strong password, and that's as secure as it gets.
Okay, so that would really actually work very nicely because that's in the notes section, and I can use it for, let's say, my parents' social security numbers.
Absolutely,
and what have you.
That's what I use it for, and you could even put patient notes in there if you wanted to, and they would be secure.
Okay, can you spell that for me, LastPass?
LastPass, just like it sounds. Password you'll ever need. It's LastPass.com. It's free. I would recommend the premium version, $1 a month. That gives you some additional features, including mobile apps. So they have apps for every device, including your Galaxy S4. You're not trusting anybody with the encryption, which I like. Even when you use the iPhone or Samsung security features, in most cases, those companies have access to that information. So it's really best to use trust no one encryption. Only you have the key. LastPass cannot look at your information. They cannot see it. Only you can. It's truly secure, and I love that.
Okay, so let me ask you one quick question. Did you say that if I download a particular game or something like that for my kids, that will also secure it to make sure that it's like an antivirus, anti-malware?
Nothing is anti-malware, but the good news is all Android devices check for malware. There has, despite Apple's insistence that Android is a toxic hell stew, it is not. It is as safe as any. Mobile platforms are essentially safe because they've been written from the ground up to be secure. So don't worry about that. If you do not download apps from weird places, if you download apps from the Google Play Store, you're fine. I do suggest turning on the encryption on your device. It's great. It's important to do that anyway. I think, to avoid information leakage, to protect yourself in case the phone's lost. It doesn't help you with malware, but it definitely helps you if a bad guy gets your phone.
And how do I turn on the encryption?
It's in the settings. You can turn it on. But in order for any phone to be encrypted, you have to also turn on a passcode to unlock the phone. That's hand in hand.
I see. So I have to have the password on the phone in order to do that.
Please do that, though, please, because okay. I'm telling you, you only have to lose your phone once without a passcode to realize what a pain in the butt this is. Because all your phone history is there, so that includes whoever you've called. Regardless of whether you're storing the phone numbers privately, it's still visible. And all your data, all your private data is in there. And a guy has access to the hard drive. There's nothing to stop him from banging on it till he unlocks everything. I just think it's very important, in my opinion, and everybody who's listening. I don't want to pick on you, Rami, but everybody who's listening, turn on a passcode on your phone. Turn on encryption.
Okay, so two quick questions. Number one, the LastPass, that will encrypt it, and every time I want to look into it, I have to punch in a passcode?
Yep. But that's what you want. Anything less is not going to be secure. And by the way, the advantage of LastPass is it's also on your desktop. So you can put all that stuff in there easily, simply on your desktop. It syncs right to your phone.
Wow. Okay, fantastic. And this passcode that you're talking about in terms of phone, it's really that secure?
If you use a good, strong password, no one can break it.
Wow.
Don't use monkey123. Don't use your kid's birthday and your dog's name. Use a good random passcode. You have to memorize that one password. You'll never have to memorize another password because it just keeps track of all your passwords from then on.
Okay, can I ask you one more quick question?
Sure.
On my computer at home, I have Kaspersky antivirus. Someone recommended that I put on, I think it's called Spark Trust or something
like
that.
No, Kaspersky's plenty.
Okay.
But you know what? You could put every...
Malware as well?
You could put every program in the world on your computer, it won't prevent you from doing dumb things. And we were talking at the beginning of the show, I cannot believe how many emails I get. They're very deceptive. American Express wants to give you a rewards card. Click the link. You see a American Express card field. You enter in your login and your password. No anti-malware program in the world is going to protect you against that. You cannot be protected against yourself. Malware programs have to allow you to install software.
Right.
They cannot lock you down unless you behave yourself. And that's the key, is everybody needs to know what it is to do safe computing. Don't click links in email. Don't download programs from oddball sources. Make sure they're always reliable and trusted. If something warns you, and this happens all the time, it's very deceptive, very easy to fall for it. It says, your bank account's been compromised. Quick, log in. We got to save your money.
My concern is more my kids, even though they're not on the admin.
Well, hold on a second. I'll talk about that when we come back. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Rami, still there. One more question, Rami, then I got to move on. Your kids, you're worried about your kids.
Yes. Even though they're not under the admin account, can they download something or what have you that then would give them access to my information that is under the admin account?
Absolutely not.
Okay.
You're safe there. In fact, they can't even see. That's better than any of this other antivirus stuff because they're running as a limited user. They can't install applications. And almost, I would say without exception, for a bad guy to get something on your system, he has to get you to run an application. So the very fact they can't run applications means they're probably safer than you are.
Fantastic. Okay.
Thanks,
Ryan. Do you recommend anybody outside of Kaspersky, or that's a good way to go?
No, Kaspersky's great. I like Kaspersky. We have, we're for many years had a sponsor. I don't know where they went. But I still love them. ESET, Nod 32. That's probably my favorite antivirus. It's very lightweight, doesn't get in the way. But since you already have Kaspersky, my point is the antivirus is kind of a second line of defense. And will not protect you against yourself if, for instance, you're running as an administrator and you say, I guess I do need that new flash the hacker.com recommended. And you download it and you run it. And it turns out, hey, this wasn't flash. This was a virus. Kaspersky, ESET, they'll all let you do that. They'll warn you if they scan it and they say, hey, this application's not safe. but they can't protect you against yourself. Fran, San Diego, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Fran.
Hi. I listen to you all the time. I love your show. I have no idea what you're talking about because I don't understand, but I'm trying to learn with you. So thank you very much.
Oh, I hope it's not too intimidating.
Well, it is, but I'm trying.
Well, I try to make it accessible. You know, this isn't hard stuff. You know, 6-year-olds are using computers very well. So
I know. Don't tell me that.
But it's our own mental. But what I'm saying is, it's not that our lack of capacity. It's our own mental blocks that make it hard. We think it's going to be hard.
Thank you. That's sweet, but I don't accept that.
See, you blame yourself, and that makes me mad. I think we have failed, as the computer industry has failed, because we all blame ourselves. For years, my motto was, "It's not your fault."
Well, thank you.
They've made this too hard. All right, go ahead and ask your dumb question. Just teasing. Okay.
I feel really
I'm just kidding you. I'm just kidding you. What can I do for you, Fran?
I want to get my husband a laptop for his birthday. He's way more technically savvy than I am. We bought him a tablet and a pad, and he returned them. He didn't want it.
See, so this is the risk of buying for a geek. They know what they want.
True.
Right.
I'll tell you, he doesn't do, you know, anything like video editing or... I know he plays like Angry Birds on a cell phone, but I don't think he's going to play it on the laptop.
Well, what would he do with a computer? Is he email, surfing the net?
Uh-huh. And also, like, if we travel, he likes to watch movies on the plane.
Ah. See, a tablet was a good idea, but he didn't like that, huh?
No, he didn't like it. He didn't want that. He wants a regular laptop.
Is he a Windows guy?
I asked him before I spoke to you. He uses Windows 7.
My favorite Windows 7 or 8 laptop, and actually I would, he's going to resist this, but he'll be glad in the long run if he just hangs on his Windows 8, the latest version of Windows, is the Asus S7. I've recommended it before. It's my Windows laptop. It's very thin and light. It's as thin and light as a tablet, but it's a full laptop computer running Windows 8. It's very powerful. It's beautiful. Uh-huh.
And that's, what did you say?
ASUS. I'm sorry, not ASUS. ACER. Acer, not Asus.
Okay.
Acer S7. S is in Sam 7. You can buy it online, but you might also be able to find it at a computer store if you shop around. There aren't any computer stores really anymore, are there?
No, but I have a friend who's on the military base, and I was going to see if I could get it.
All right.
There.
Okay. Those are very nice. I'll tell you the brand names I like. Lenovo. Your husband would nobody ever got sad because he got a Lenovo.
Okay.
Those are the ThinkPads. They're wonderful. Do you have a budget?
I don't know what they. I don't even know what they cost.
If you could spend $1,000 or more, that's better.
Yeah. Yeah, I would, because it's his 60th birthday.
Oh, yeah. You should get him a nice one. Okay, 60th birthday, get him a ThinkPad Carbon X1.
Think?
Now, I didn't know this was a big birthday. See, if it's a big birthday, you should get him a nice one. The ThinkPad Lenovo, Lenovo, Carbon X1. That's a beautiful system.
Okay.
Gorgeous system.
And he can watch movies on that and everything.
He can launch rockets on it.
Okay. And it would do Windows 7?
Yeah, you can. In fact, Lenovo will sell it with Windows 7 or 8.
Okay. All right. Wonderful. Thank you very much for your
help. That's a great big birthday.
Yeah. Thank you. Love listening to you.
All right, friend. Yeah, I think you'll be happy, but just make sure it's returnable.
I do with everything I get him.
You know, I know the feeling because I buy jewelry for my girl, and, you know, I just always make sure she can return this, right? And they always say, oh, yeah. It's the same thing. I could buy her a computer. If she wanted a computer, I'd know what to get, but jewelry, no. Mm-mm.
Yeah, that's my problem because everything I've gotten him, he's returned.
Now, what do you do the same to him? If he bought you a beautiful dress, would you just say, thank you, where's the receipt?
No, we have an agreement that if we don't like something and if it's expensive,
yes.
We'll
that's
return
a
it.
Healthy relationship. Yes.
Yeah,
that's the only way to do it. How long have you been married?
Figure this out. We were married in 77.
A little while.
Yes.
You're coming up on your 40th.
Pardon me?
You've passed your... No, you're coming up on your 40th in a few years.
Yeah. Wow. You're right.
See, that's the secret. You can exchange it. If I don't like it, I'll exchange it.
True.
I'm
happy.
Yeah. See? That's the secret. That and yes, dear. The X1 is a re... Yeah, now that I know it's a 60, I love the Acer S7. It's beautiful. It's what I use. Highly recommended. But this is a big number birthday. Get him an X1. Let him live it a little. Live a little.
ThinkPad Carbon X1 by Lenovo. And what would be the general price of it?
Oh, it's in the $1,500 range.
Okay.
You can at different prices depending on how fancy, you know, how big a processor and stuff. Get him an i5, 8 gigs of RAM.
i5
processor, 8 gigs of RAM.
8 gigs of RAM.
And that'll be it's not $1,400, $1,500, I think.
Okay.
This is Windows 7, you don't need a touch screen. They'll help you. You can go online and buy this one. It's Lenovo.com.
I think that's what he bought me for my computer.
I bet it is. It's the high price spread.
And it's not a touchpad. I think he likes a touch screen.
Well, Windows 7 and touch screen is not compatible. So if that's the case, get him Windows 8, because Windows 8 is touch focused. Windows 7 is not. It's an afterthought, and it's not a good idea.
It is a good idea.
It is not. Get him a Windows 8 machine.
Instead of the 7.
Yeah, the X1 Touch.
X1 Touch, okay.
But the problem with this is, if he says, no, I want Windows 7, you maybe just ask him, hey, honey, I'm wondering about this Windows thing. You know, I like Touch. Does that mean Windows 7 or Windows 8?
Okay.
Play dumb.
That's not hard for me to do.
Honey, I was listening to Leo. What did he mean by touch? What is that? Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Oh, honey. Why is there more than one kind of Windows? Are there 8 different Windows? No, dear. They just call it Windows 8. It's really the 10th Windows. Aren't you adorable? Windows is, it's not the 8th Windows. It's just a made-up random number. It seemed like a good number at the time. Our show today brought to you by Gazelle.com. Gazelle is a great place to go if your honey got you the wrong phone. And it's too late to return it, or maybe you want to get the newest, the latest, the greatest, GAZELLE.com. It's where you can sell your phone and your electronics, get top dollar, cash, money on the barrelhead. They buy broken iPhones and iPads, too. Got a cracked screen, want to get a new one? Hey, by all means. Well, let's just see, in fact, what an iPhone would be worth these days. You ready for the new iPhone? You hear lots of good things about it. Just get a quote. These are good for 30 days. Thinking, I have that iPhone 5. Or maybe, let's be realistic here. You got an iPhone 5 and you want a 5S. It's on AT&T. It's a 32-gig AT&T iPhone 5. What? $220? What a deal. $220. That pays for the next phone, and you got $20 to get a case. I want you to visit GAZELLE.com. They've paid out more than $100 million to over 700,000 customers. You can get quotes on all your devices. They're good for 30 days. You have 30 days to decide, 30 days to get the new stuff, to transfer your data over, whatever. Once you decide to sell, push the button, check out. They'll send you a box with the prepaid postage on anything worth more than a buck. They turn it around fast. Their data experts will wipe any data you leave on there. I always recommend wiping your data, but if you don't, if you forget or you can't, they'll do it for you. And then you get paid fast by check, by PayPal, or get an extra 5% if you buy a lot of stuff on Amazon. Get that Amazon gift card. GAZELLE, gazelle.com. Free shipping, fast processing, trustworthy. It's where we sell all our old stuff. Get your gadgets sold. Clear the way for the new at Gazelle. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. If you count, you'll get an awful lot of Windows. Let's see. There's Windows 1 was the first Windows, and there I don't know if there's a Windows 2. I don't remember that. There was Windows 3, Windows 3.1, and 3.11. We'll just count that as one of them. Windows 95, Windows 98, Windows 90, Windows ME, Windows XP. I'm skipping the NT versions. I'll just skip those. Windows XP, Windows Vista, Windows 7. By that count, Windows 8 is Windows 10. And there could be more. There's at least 10. We left out Windows NT, 3.5.1, 4.0, Windows 2000. That's three more. I haven't yet to find a way that you can get Windows 8 to be actually the eighth version of anything. That doesn't matter. It's just a number. Now, interesting, because Apple has kind of a problem. Their OS 10 is now in version 10.9. The next version of OS 10, they've announced Yosemite, will be Windows 10, and that's a Roman numeral 10, Windows 10, version 10.10. Windows 10, 10, 10. At what point do they go to Windows 11? I don't know if they want to go to, I mean, I'm sorry, I said Windows. What point do they go at OS 11? Maybe never, I don't know. It's all very confusing. That means they're just code names or names. It's for marketing purposes. And there will be somebody, I guarantee you, I will get email from somebody that says, no, no, Leo, it is actually the eighth version of Windows. Let me demonstrate for you how you get to eight. I don't think there's any way to get to eight. Mark Aliso Viejo, California. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Mark.
Oh, hey, Leo. How are you?
Well, I'm well. Hey.
Well, great. Big podcast listener. That's all I listen to in the car anymore.
Oh, bless you. Thank you.
Yeah, I love it. I hate Adobe Reader, and I have...
And rightly so, by the way.
And basically eliminated it from all my computers and replaced it with a Foxit Reader, which works really well.
Foxit's very good.
And my question is, with all the security issues with Reader, does Foxit have that same problem?
Not the same problems, but they do have problems, yeah. So here's the deal, really. It's an easy thing to understand. In fact, these days, all malware, spyware, bad stuff comes in through the internet. There were days when, you know, you could get, you know, Melissa came in on a floppy. And there are still some viruses that can propagate via USB key. But basically, all the risks to you are via the internet. And so, bad guys bang on, you know, they've kind of stopped banging on the operating system because Microsoft's been pretty good about keeping Windows up to date. So now they're going to bang on anything that goes on the internet. That means your browser. That means anything your browser might call if it goes to a web page. So PDFs are very common on web pages. And when a browser sees a PDF, normally by default, it will call up whatever PDF reader you have on your system. If it's Adobe Reader, that's what it's going to call. So the bad guys have paid particular attention to that, to Flash, to anything that gets called up by the browser or the browser itself. Now, as it turns out, Adobe has done a pretty bad job programming both Adobe Reader and Adobe Flash. I mean, if one were uncharitable, one could say they really did a terrible, terrible job. There are so many flaws in there. I've lost count. It's in the dozens of flaws in the last year have been fixed. And Adobe's been in the past slow to fix those. They're getting better. But you're right. It's probably prudent not to use the most. The problem is Adobe Reader is installed on most PCs. So they're going to always attack through the thing that's the vector that's most likely to be there. So by using Foxit, if nothing else, you're using a less commonly used program. Now, it happens to be probably number two to Reader. So bad guys have banged on that, and there have been flaws in Foxit. So it's a good idea with anything that goes on the internet, and this includes plugins the browsers call, to keep them up to date and pay close attention to make sure they're always up to date. But Foxit's fine. I like Foxit. I think it's more capable. It's less expensive. Reader's free, but the Foxit, if you're going to get the whole Adobe Acrobat suite, the Foxit version is much, much less expensive. There are other choices. There's Nitro PDF. A lot of people recommend that. There's Cute PDF. There's other ones. They're not necessarily safer. They're just less used.
Well, I've been so happy with a Fox that
I love Foxes. Stay with Foxes. Yeah.
Getting rid of Adobe Reader was probably the best thing.
Painful. You know what we'll do though is we'll on the chat page because on the web page because we're getting it in the chat. Lots of suggestions like Sumatra PDF. So for alternatives. So let's list Primo, Sumatra, Foxit, Cute. Let's get all the PDF readers we can on that webpage. James will write these down as they go by in the chat room. And that will be a very nice thing to have as some alternatives. I think I used Foxit for years, and I use their big suite, and I think it's great.
Thanks, Leo.
Hey, thanks for the call. Good question. An important lesson, important thing to keep in mind. Bad guys... The people who create malware, adware, spyware, they're rational humans. They're going to pick a target that is easy to hit and is widespread use. It's one of the reasons the Mac has been less vulnerable is it's not in widespread use. It's still only 5% of all computers in use. So it's not as it doesn't pay off as well. They're going to go with like Willie Sutton. They're going to go where the money is. And, of course, it's going to be something that goes on the Internet. Otherwise, they can't get to it. Jim in Harbor City, California. Hi, Jim.
How you doing, Leo?
I'm well. How are you?
Well, not too well.
Uh-oh. What's the matter?
Okay. I'm using an iMac, and I'm using Snow Leopard.
Mm-mm.
And when I boot up, I get a gray screen with a little message that says, you need to restart your computer, hold down the power button until it turns off, then press the power button again. I've done that. I've disconnected all the peripherals except for an Apple keyboard and mouse. I'm not able to boot, safe boot, and I'm not able to boot from a startup disk. And so here I am.
Ooh, okay, because my first guess would be that the hard drive had died, but you just said something very interesting. Even if you put an operating system disk in, it won't start up.
I get the same gray screen with the message.
Is the message in many languages?
Yes, it is.
Ugh. That's what we call a kernel panic.
That's what I thought.
So if your operating system gets damaged, your hard drive gets damaged, you'll just get a blinking question mark. But when you get that screen and it goes slowly down the screen, it goes gray and it says it in Chinese and Spanish and French and English.
Correct.
That is a kernel panic. It means that the computer couldn't go on. And if it happens when the minute you turn on the computer, you've got something seriously wrong with the hardware. So there's a couple of things you're going to, if you called AppleCare, there's a couple of things they would do. And I'm going to go through these. We don't have time for you to actually do them. But first try zapping the pram. You know about that?
Yep.
You did it?
I haven't done that yet.
So you reboot, or just, I guess in this case, turn off the machine. Hold down Command and Option and P and R. Four fingers.
Right.
And then turn it on. It'll go bong. Let it go bong three times and then let it boot up. Sometimes that fixes it because maybe there's some corruption in the pram. But more likely, you got a motherbird problem. You got something serious. I hope not for your sake. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. Have a great Geek Week. Well, that's it for the Tech Guy show for today. I'm Leo Laporte. Thank you so much for joining us. Don't forget, the Tech Guy is just the tip of the iceberg. We do nearly 30 shows now on the Twit Netcast Network, and you'll find them all at twit.tv. We talk about Windows on Windows Weekly, Macintosh on Mac Break Weekly, iPad on iPad Today. You get your daily dose of tech news from Tech News Today and our weekly roundtable show, This Week in Tech. It's all at twit.tv. And I'll be back next time with another great Tech Guy podcast. Thanks for joining me. See you next time.